Log Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country, and Tuesday's center stage, front and center, is Cleveland, Ohio. So we move over the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We don't concentrate on the Browns and who's quarterbacking. We'll put the Cavaliers off to the side unless Craig Elo decides to come back in here, which he does. But it's the American Sports History Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, a friend, Peter Ray. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing in Los Angeles. It goes by quick, 347-205-9631. But you can catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast. Platforms where you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So it's more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, and hand off the mic. First of all, Peter, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? And third of all, another great guest coming through your show. And it's too bad next week's an archive, you know, but boy almighty, I am so blessed to produce this each and every Tuesday for you.
Hi, Mark. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's I'm doing well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter J-R-E-A. I'm on Facebook. People can send me a friend request. I'd be happy to accept it, and we could message. You're absolutely right. Tonight's guest is the author of the book. The title of the book is Steve Kerr, A Life. It came out last year. Steve Kerr won 5 NBA championships as a player, 4 as a coach. Wow. And this tremendous book that came out last year. We have the author on tonight. Welcome, Mr. Scott Howard Cooper.
How are you guys? I'm excited to be here.
Oh, very well. First of all, Scott, do you want to give us an overall view of your book on Steve Kerr?
I'll tell you how I pitched it to the publisher when we had the conversations when talking to who was interested in buying this book to publish it. I said, it's the story of a guy with a unique career but a fascinating life. It's amazing to dig into this personal story. Forget the unlikely events that led to him stacking up all those championships that you mentioned. Just his life story, away from the court, growing up in parts of the Middle East. He lost his father, who was assassinated when Steve was a freshman at the University of Arizona. He was a college player who blew out his knee and was told, your career is over. It obviously wasn't. He's a guy that never thought he could play in the Pac-10, as it was at the time, let alone have any kind of pro career. By the time he got to a senior, he was so optimistic. He went all the way to saying, maybe I can squeeze a year or two out of the NBA. And he played 15. It's just the most incredible life story in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm really, I would say, an international person interested in foreign countries. And, you know, you look at the NBA, it seems to me to be the most international American sport, and, you know, followed all over the world. And now you have so many international players in the NBA. And, you know, Steve Kerr, he had much of his growing up was in Lebanon and Egypt. Seems to me that, you know, in the NBA, you got a lot of cultural, ethnic and cultural differences on teams. And do you want to talk about Kerr's growing up in Lebanon and Egypt and how that might have helped him in his NBA career?
Well, Beirut in particular, Lebanon, is a central part of his life. It's where he was born. It's where his parents met. His mom was a college student in Los Angeles, and she said, I'm going to take a year abroad, as a lot of people do, and ended up getting placed at this American university in Beirut. And the one of the students there happened to be the son of two people who worked at the university. And they're both Americans. Malcolm Kerr was a guy that spent time in New Jersey, grew up in Princeton, still has family based there. But his parents were drawn to the Middle East. And so that's where Malcolm spent a lot of time. Steve's parents met there. As I said, Steve was born there, and that's where Steve's father was killed. So Lebanon is a large part of his life. And living in different parts of the world really shaped him in ways that we see now. Now, all these years later, as he's become a head coach, the way he embraces other cultures, the way he's so interested in learning about new people and new places. He loves conversations, not just, you know, I got to put up with this because I'm a famous person, but he's genuinely interested in learning about people and places. It shapes a lot of who he is now.
Donnie from Rahwa, New Jersey. Hi, fellas. What's wrong with my New York Knicks? Cost me a mortgage to go watch them, and every year they just become the Washington Generals. Keep up the great work, Peter. Another great talent in Scott tonight.
Well,
any thoughts on the Knicks today, Scott?
I wish that there was an answer that was different from the one that we could have given and have been giving for what, decades, right? It starts at the top. It's a dysfunctional organization. It's an ownership thing. There's obviously been problems with stability in the front office, in the coaching, on the sidelines. And I feel for their fans. It's such a great place. It's such a great arena, just the basketball energy. I believe what everybody says about it just feels different there, and that's from someone that's been there for a lot of NBA games. And to say the mortgage payments are just going down the drain, that's what really hurts, that the product has become so expensive, not just in New York, really everywhere, but in New York in particular. It's the same old problem.
Yeah, what's interesting is they were able to bring in Phil Jackson, who had this tremendous background, and of course Steve Kerr was felt strongly tied to him because of their time together with the Bulls, and looked like Kerr was going to be the Knicks head coach, and then of course he made the shift to what became a perfect situation with the Warriors, and then what do you think would have happened if you think Steve Kerr could have made a dent on that situation there with his good character? If he had been hired by the Knicks?
No.
Okay.
You know what? A dent, maybe. There may have been that credibility boost. He would have certainly invested himself 100%. He wanted to be there. He accepted the job. He desperately wanted to coach for Phil Jackson, wanted to work for Phil Jackson. Felt that Phil basically gave him a new lease on life when Phil brought him to the Bulls and then gave him such a large role. So he wanted to be with Phil, and Phil had envisioned Steve Kerr as a future coach long before either of them were in that New York situation. I think he could have made a slight difference in that regard, but Steve would not have liked it there. One of the reasons he chose not to go was not only because the Warriors were a better situation in a lot of different ways, was because he was very concerned about the ownership situation that we just alluded to a few minutes ago, saw that there were problems bound to happen, and that's one of the reasons he turned away.
Albert from Poway, California. Scott, do you think San Diego will ever get another NBA team?
Unfortunately, no. Great city, large market, has lost an NBA team twice and had an ABA team also dry up, which isn't necessarily unique. Those were obviously a long time ago, but I just don't get the sense. I know that a lot of people in Poway would probably love that just because it's close and being able to go to games, but I don't see it happening. And I can't figure out the San Diego situation in general. I don't know exactly what's going on there. I'm a lifetime Californian, but all you hear about, not all you hear, but most of what you hear about teams leaving, whether it's football teams or basketball teams, I'd love to see the Padres get some traction. I don't want them to get too much traction because I'm a Dodger guy, I'd say it's a real long shot. When you think about teams and NBA cities, rather, an NBA expansion, I don't think San Diego is that close to the top.
Yeah, they say, San Diego has the smallest market, the Pacific Ocean to the west, L.A. to the north, the desert to the east, and Mexico to the south, which is, I don't think the Mexicans are really into basketball. I may be wrong, but of course it's an international border as well. Albert from Russ from Modesto, California. Steve Kerr adapts to the players. He was offered that Knicks job, said no to that circus act, found a winner in California. I feel for that listener. In other words, the hard times as a Knicks fan. Harry from Braintree, Massachusetts. Hey, Scott, we need the rivalries in the NBA again. I heard this year on Christmas, Denver and Phoenix playing each other. That's a joke. Give me Celtics, Lakers, Sixers, Lakers, Bulls, Pistons.
Boy, you're right. And I think that pretty much everybody would agree with that. My sense on the Christmas Day game is that they're trying to spread it around a little bit. Obviously want marquee teams, big names like some of the Nuggets players have and some of the Suns players have. I think that they're just trying to not make it Lakers, Warriors, Knicks, Celtics. They would like the market there, even if they wouldn't like the Knicks as a great success story. Unfortunately, I think it's going to continue.
Yeah, back
to
the
they want to spread it around.
Back to the Steve Kerr's life. Now the time he lost his father was murdered, as you mentioned, right at the beginning of his first year of college. He's going to play college basketball, and it was a public murder, really international news. And I think what's interesting is how they told him, reading your book, they said, hey, Steve, you can take some time off. And he said no, because he was on a team. He needed support. And it seemed like, that the college he was, I guess, in Arizona, it seemed to me that there was just so much, he got so much support. And that death of his father, it didn't destroy, it seemed to fuel him in a way that he just, he had this terrible wound, but instead of becoming self-destructive, he really... it seemed to fuel him in his career, and to me, it seemed like.
Well, you mentioned the support that he got there. It was amazing. The entire city, all of Tucson, rallied behind him. He came out and, as you said, declined to go to Lebanon for the funeral, said, I would be sitting there. At least here, I want to stay with my team. It wasn't I want to play basketball. It was I need to play basketball. He needed to keep moving. He needed to have that distraction. He needed to have something to do, not sit on airplanes for two long rides there and back. And had an amazing game. They played Arizona State, and he comes off the bench. He's a freshman. Starts hitting shots. Then he hits another one, and then he hits another one. And I talked to people who were at McHale Center that night at the arena, and they give it that old line about the hairs on the back of your neck standing up, because that's what it was like. And the whole town came together behind this freshman who had gone through so much. And they supported him. He forever endeared himself, and he has loved Tucson ever since. It's amazing because he was barely recruited in high school. He didn't sign with Arizona until after his high school graduation, and that was only because Arizona was coming off a 4-win season, had one scholarship left to give, and Lute Olson saw him by accident and said, yeah, okay, sure, for 1 year, then I'll recruit over him and replace him. And you look up now, Steve then, and still to this day, is the most popular athlete in University of Arizona history. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, moving on with his life, I thought one of the key times, the fact, yeah, as you mentioned, he never thought he'd have this 15-year playing career in the NBA. And it seemed to me, based on reading your book, that one of the key moments was with the Chicago Bulls, when he got into a fight with Michael Jordan in practice. And, Jordan is so intimidating. Everybody's afraid of him, and people, he would kind of bully people or be, push people around. And everyone's scared, like, oh, wow, if Jordan gets mad at them, they'll get released, something like that. But it seemed to me that, after that fight, he really earned Jordan's respect. And then, and of course, Jordan passed him, and Kerr hit that big shot that helped win the NBA Finals for the Bulls in what, 97 maybe, and so that seemed, you know, and if you do that, if you help a team win an NBA, that's going to propel your career. You want to talk about that, about Kerr on the Bulls and that incident with Jordan and that whole saga?
It gets even better because he was close to retiring. He was telling people he had been in Cleveland, got traded to Orlando, barely played in Orlando. The Magic thought so little of him, they didn't even have a conversation about bringing him back at the minimum. And it goes, he's a free agent, and it goes through July, through August, through most of September. He's not getting a single offer. And he's telling people, I think I may have to retire. I probably should call Lute Olson and see if I can go back there, back to Tucson as a grad assistant and work on becoming an assistant coach and then a head coach one day. And he ends up going to the Bulls, and everything changes for him there. And among the many quirks of Steve's life story that we mentioned before were so amazing is the way bad things turned into good. And one of the bad things was getting clocked by Michael Jordan and losing a fight and losing it badly ended up becoming one of the best things that ever happened to him, because at least he was going to stand up to Michael Jordan. And Michael wasn't used to that. People were afraid of him. He was very intimidating. He was a bully. He would push people around. And here finally was a guy that would stand up to him. And that earned so much respect for Michael Jordan. And then, as you mentioned, hits the not just the game winner, but the series winner, delivers a championship to Chicago. And that's one of the reasons why a guy who came off the bench for basically his entire time with the Bulls is one of the most popular people in Chicago sports today, even when he goes back now, all these years later. And that's part of the Steve Kerr storyline as well, that bad things turning into good things, and getting in a fight with Michael Jordan turned out to be one of the best things to ever happen to him.
Gary from New Rochelle, New York, top five guards of all time, Bob Cousy, Walt Frazier, Nate Archibald, Magic Johnson, and Jerry West. What are yours?
Oh, gosh. Off the top of my head. That's tough. I'm going to miss somebody because it's off the top of my head. In no particular order, Magic, Michael Jordan. Did he have Michael on his list? We're talking
no.
Guards or point guard?
He just says guards.
All right, I'm gonna have Michael there. He squeezes into my top five on the guards. I think John Stockton gets overlooked way too much. People obviously think he's a Hall of Famer. There was nothing he wasn't great at. He was a great passer, vision, really good defender, great shooter. Showed up every single night. I'm going to have John Stockton in my top five. I don't know who we're missing. Yeah, I'll go there. I'll start with there and have to apologize that I didn't have a list handy. I'm running through all these names in my head. I don't want to leave anybody out.
Okay, back to Steve Kerr's life. What's interesting is that, yeah, the Jordan, everybody dispersed in Chicago, and he ends up with the you see this guy, how he always ends up in good situations. He ends up going to the Spurs, you know, one of the great, well, really a dynasty team over the last 20 years, wins a couple more titles. You want to talk about his time with the Spurs?
It was very strange because he was not a fit there at all, and they gave him big money to come there. Greg Popovich was not a guy who liked a three-point shot, thought it was just a gimmick. Now, remember, this was in the 1990s when the game was much different than it is now. At this point, Steve would be getting truckloads of money just because the three-point shot has become so much more valuable. Popovich did not like the three-point shot, and that was Steve's strength. And Popovich loved defense, and that was not Steve's game at all. But they end up bringing him on. He's this veteran influence, has trouble fitting in, goes long stretches where he doesn't play. And to be honest, for a guy that is so associated with that team, mainly because of Pop and because he was there for championships, did not have a big contribution at all. That's kind of what makes it strange.
And then, of course, he ends up getting into the as it comes the coach of the Warriors, and you could say it was perfect timing, or you know you have to give him credit. And what's interesting, I think, about the Warriors is here they of course the year they won 73 games, and he had horrific back pain. And but then I think the thing that strikes me is you know you wrote this book before, you know, they just won the title this year, and you know they had the KD era. KD comes and then goes, and then you know, they have these horrific injuries, and they're really down and out. And then they win last year again, and I think that's really impressed me. You want to talk about his time with the Warriors as coach?
It's been a proving ground in all the best kind of ways. He had wanted to be a coach for so long. As he was leaving school, he thought maybe coaching, maybe athletic director. He wanted something in sports. But then as he got into the NBA more and more, he got away from the administration part and didn't consider that anymore. Knew for a long time he wanted to get into coaching and had a lot of offers almost as soon as he left, as soon as he retired as a player. A lot of people thought that this guy had coaching superstar all over him, and turned them down because he had three kids at home and felt like he had been gone enough as a player and wanted to be around to see his kids grow up. And so stayed away from coaching for a long time. And finally, when Phil talked to him about coming to the Knicks, thought it was time. And then the Warriors got involved, and he couldn't turn his back on that. So he knew he wanted to do it. And to say that it has been everything he hoped for would be a massive understatement. It's been so much more than he could have hoped for, I would have to think. He's been with an organization he loves in a part of the country where he wanted to be. And remember, he was GM of the Phoenix Suns when he tried to acquire a guy coming out of Davidson named Steph Curry, and thought that he had Steph on a draft night deal with the Warriors, thought he had Curry coming to the Phoenix Suns. So what happens? He ends up with Steph Curry with the Warriors. It's been amazing how it turned out. It's been a dream scenario. He proved that he could coach. I know a lot of people don't want to give him credit, partly because he's become unpopular to some people because of his political views, partly because there's this sense with a coach of any loaded team that, oh, it's just roll the balls out and anybody, I can coach this team. It's no big deal. If I had that roster, I would have won as well. But he has shown a remarkable ability to adapt. And there's been some different players he's had to work in. He relies a lot on his assistant coaches. But he's been a unifier in that team, not just in the locker room, but throughout the organization in a lot of different ways. He's been a great success.
You know, for me, the most important thing in life is to have good character. That, you know, people want to have material success. They want to do well financially, and so that's fine, you know, and they want to achieve things. But to me, more important than that is to be a good person. And as I read your book, the thing that impressed me and inspired me was I thought, you know, is that I feel like Steve Kerr is an example of how good character does lead to success, and how, you know, the fact that this guy didn't have much talent, but he was just so persevering and strong-spirited. And I love the part you mentioned when I think he was on a basketball team, international team, and they were in Europe, and the bus stopped at Gibraltar, and they were all, you know, like the entrance to the Mediterranean Sea, very historical place, and a bunch of players were just going to sleep on the bus. And he got on the bus and said, "Get the hell off the bus. This is a great opportunity. You know, come on, what the hell's wrong with you? And this is, you got to see Gibraltar." So they and again, that shows courage is an undervalued trait that, because, you know, you can get in trouble with courage, but, you know, he showed it with Jordan. He showed it, you know, that scene in Gibraltar. And then this, you know, you talked in your book about how he would, like, now as coach, he goes to here, he shows up every game at the arena there, in Oakland or in San Francisco now, and he knows like vendors by name and security guards, and asks them about their families, and he thinks, wow, and you know, as a player, you talked about how he would tell them like, hey, I'll do anything you need to do in terms of the press. And you know, so to me, he was a good person, and he was patient, and he had this humility, and he had all these really good qualities. And do you want to talk about his good character and how that played a role in his life and his success?
One of the most well-liked guys in the NBA for probably four decades now. Maybe even longer if you go back before he actually came into the league in the late 1980s. Nobody is liked by everybody. It's just impossible, especially in sports where a lot of it is about making difficult decisions as a coach and as a GM, or fighting for roster spots and getting in fights with teammates as a player. But Steve probably comes as close to anybody. I've never sat down and done any kind of ranking of most well-liked guys in the league since the 1980s, but I tell you what, you don't get very far before you mention Steve Kerr's name. He is in a special place in this league in that regard, that he is so well-respected, he is so well-liked. Again, I get that's not the case in some communities around the country because of his political views, but within the NBA, you'd have to work really hard to find many people who don't like him. He's a good guy. He's down to earth. He cares about other people. He is so appreciative of his success. He doesn't go around big leaguing people nearly as much as he could. If we mentioned his ring count at the start of the conversation, most people who've opened up a jewelry store in their house with all those championship rings could really be a jerk and get away with it, and he's the farthest thing from it.
Yeah, see, this is the problem, you know, that you often see with rich wealth and fame is the development of pride, and then people misbehave. And, you know, for the average person, if you misbehave, there are consequences, you know. People react badly, and then you think, all right, I was wrong, I shouldn't do that. But when you're rich and famous, you know, that's the pitfall where you can misbehave, and then nothing happens, and then so you don't realize you've done something wrong, and then you continue to misbehave because you think, well, I can't make a mistake because I am whoever I am, you know. Kurt, that never happened. So you have to give him a lot of credit for remaining humble and not being self-centered. You know, a lot of the guys say that's what impressed me when he thought, wow, he knows the vendors by name. You know, well, he's there every day, and he took the time. You know, these people that they're just, well, you know, but it takes all those people in an organization. So to me, a guy like Steve Kerr is so good for morale. You know, morale is so important for the spirit, not only in the team, the front office, the whole organization. So a guy like that I think that's such an important thing that he does, wherever he is for the morale is really high because of him.
I talked to so many people in the research for this book who wanted not only to speak of what they saw of Steve on the court or in a basketball setting, whether as a coach or a GM, an announcer, of course, or as a player, but wanted to speak of him away from the game and share their stories. And so many people had these, oh, I got to tell you this one about Steve after a practice, or I hadn't talked to him in 5 years and I sent him a text and, you know, gosh, he was so great in responding to me. There's so many people that have stories just on how he has made a positive impression in a personal way, not just basketball conversation.
Yeah, that's so inspiring for me because a lot of people think, you know, there's a lot of ignorance. People think, oh, you got to be a jerk, you got to look out for number one, and you know, you have to, and I don't believe that. And I believe that good character, in the long run, does pay off, and it does lead to. And he's a good example of that. So that's just your book is a wonderful. Shows that very well, you know, and I think it's very inspiring. Our guest has been Scott Howard Cooper, author of the 2021 book, Steve Kerr, A Life. Wonderful book. I highly recommend it. Scott, the time has flown by, our 30 minutes. Do you have any final words for our audience tonight?
Just that I hope people enjoy reading it as much as I enjoy writing it. It was a lot of work, but a lot of fun. I hope the energy comes through. He is a remarkable story. It's certainly a basketball book, but there's a lot of human interest in there as well. I hope people enjoy it.
And you're working on a book now? Do you want to talk about the book you're working on now?
I am hard at work on a book that involves another one of the all-time good guys, John Wooden. I'm taking a look at UCLA basketball's great success from the mid-60s to the mid-70s in particular. It's basically the arrival of Lou Alcindor to the departure of Bill Walton, superstar center to superstar center, and the constant winning set against the backdrop of America in a very challenging time. It's all about time and place. College campuses, Los Angeles in the 60s and 70s, and America as a whole going through Vietnam and Summer of Love and Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Richard Nixon. It is all about the backdrop of the society at the time, and here's this machine that just keeps running and churning out the championships. It's called Kingdom on Fire, and it's coming out in spring 2024.
Well, we'll look forward to your book on John Wooden and UCLA basketball back in the day. It's been wonderful having you on the show, Mr. Scott Howard Cooper. Next week we have there's going to be an archive show. A week after that, in 2 weeks, Bill North, MLB star player from the 1970s, won a couple World Series with the Oakland A's in the early 70s. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks again, Mr. Scott Howard Cooper.